Hello and welcome to End on End. I'm Brian.
And I am Greg.
Welcome back, Greg. Let's do this thing. We're going to get into a brand new band for Discord at the moment. 1993 introduces the first release by Slant Six. Greg, what kind of monster are you?
The kind that looks outwardly menacing. But actually, no. I'm the one that looks not outwardly menacing, and I'm just not a monster.
But twice as dangerous inside.
So this is cool because I was thinking, like, this is sort of getting in, for me, getting into a real time of, like, when I
like your era.
Discord, yeah. I mean, I was very young, but so it's kind of cool. I'm looking, getting some memories even just of, like, looking at the catalog and seeing this.
Right. It's funny because as anyone who's listened knows, this is kind of where I slowly started dipping out a little, not on purpose, but just having distance from DC and checking in with the bands I really cared about. But all the satellite bands like Slant Six, I, you know, was aware of, but didn't dive too deep into. I think I saw them on tour when one of my bands was on tour, but that's the extent of my Slant Sixness. Anyhow, we'll get into a little more of our history. It is minimal as it sounds like it is with this band, but their history as well. First, let's do what we always do up front, man. Let's talk about what's been inspiring us, what's going on, etc. So start us off, Greg. What's got you jazzed?
So as of the recording of this, I'm coming off of back-to-back nights of gigs. And there's a theme, right? Because it was Scottish indie pop, because I saw Bell and Sebastian on Friday night.
Oh, nice.
Who were excellent. It was my second time seeing them. And Teenage Fan Club last night. They didn't have a Philly date, so I went to Jersey City.
Wait, what decade are we in right now?
I know, right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because Bell and Sebastian, I guess both would technically be 90s. Yeah. Was like their
kind of bookends of the 90s for each band, but yeah.
And Teenage Fan, I love Bell and Sebastian, but Teenage Fan Club, as far as like that's like they're one of my all time favorite bands, any genre. And I only saw them once before they came, you know, they don't get here that much, like every 4 or 5 years,
especially in the last bunch.
Yeah,
of
it's
years.
Been 5 years since they came. And when they came 5 years ago, it was right when Jerry had left. And I was kind of like, and I wish I regret not going. So I at least had the chance to see them last night. And they've put out, you know, two records that are really good in the past, I guess, 3 years.
Yeah.
So
it's pretty active for a legacy band like that.
Yeah. I think, you know, they want to, so hopefully we get another record in a couple of years and they come back. They sounded great. Little DC connection, I believe, because when they played The Concept, they brought out Don Fleming.
Oh, cool. Yeah, yeah.
Of, you know,
Velvet Monkeys
and
yeah.
all. And he produced, you know, Bandwagon-esque. So he played guitar on The Concept. And then at the encore, he came back for Everything Flows. So,
nice. That's awesome.
yeah.
I always forget how much he produced back then. Like, he's probably way more known for his productions than his own bands, now that I think about it. He produced Screaming Trees, Teenage Fan Club, like
The Posies, I
Pose,
think.
yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
bunch
did
of
stuff
stuff.
with Sonic Youth. I think he did like Goo demos. He didn't do like the LP.
Yeah, he was in their orbit. I don't know if they produced anything, but yeah, that's
so
wild.
Yeah, a little. So that's as far as live shows. I'll bounce to you, and then if we want to go back to.
Yeah.
You know, I have a couple of records to shout.
Yeah. I saw Bell and Sebastian, I think just once, into the 90s-ish. And they were great with Jonathan Richman opening, which was just a perfect show.
Wow.
Except the crowd wasn't there for Jonathan Richman, which is just so frustrating to when people are all talking through these amazing songs and performance. But that was a great show. So my son, Xavier, he's into the Bell and Sebastian now. So,
are you going to go see them on
yeah,
this tour?
That's a show that he made it clear that he wants me to get tickets to. So we're going to that.
Awesome. There was the crowd was like pretty diverse as far as ages. And then, when they do the boy with the Arab strap and they have people like come on stage and dance or whatever, as they always do, there was a kid that got on stage and Stewart actually asked him, he said, he was wearing, I guess, like a vintage Belle and Sebastian t-shirt. He's like, "How old are you?" And he was like, 15. He's like, "You weren't even alive when that shirt
When
is
that
from."
came
And
out.
he's like, "It's my dad's." And there's like, "Where's your dad?" And he like points into the crowd. He's like, "He's right there." It was really cool. Like there was a lot of younger people into them. They kind of transcended some of the indie and metal. It like you'll see young people going off for these like legacy, legacy stuff. So yeah, he's gonna love it. I saw them for the first time after, being a casual listener and then diving deep and being like a super fan and having all the records. I saw them like 2 years ago, and I actually said after that show, I was like, I'm never missing them when they come.
Oh, cool.
They were that good. So he's gonna love it.
That's awesome. I can't wait. Yeah, for me, I've just got a book and a record. So the book that isn't a new book came out, I don't know, a couple few years ago, just a couple few. It's by Dennis Dunaway, who's best known as the bass player in the Alice Cooper group. And it's a book about his time in the Alice Cooper group, surprise, surprise, called Snakes, Guillotines, Electric Chairs. It's not anything that's going to draw in any newcomers with his stories and prose, but it's such a fun read for any casual and or diehard fan. It's definitely not boring or trite. It's like he's definitely of his era. I could have done without like probably half of the groupie stories that are in there. Besides that 70s mega rock type of vibe, there's like some great insights and stories about the recording of those classic four albums, much less the first two that most people don't know about.
Of Alice Cooper. I never dove. It's funny because I'm a person and like you and probably any, I mean, anybody that's listened to this podcast obviously cares about the history of all this stuff. And like with Alice Cooper, it's like, I know like what an important piece those early records are. John Brannon, I love Negative Approach. He's like always talking about
Always
Alice
talking about,
Cooper.
always has shirts of Alice Cooper Group,
But
named
I
his
never
band
dove
after one
in.
of the records.
What's would be the record to check out?
Loving It to Death has got to be the place to start. The most Stooges meets Rolling Stones and Detroit type of vibe
Yeah,
of
I mean,
them.
that sounds killer.
And then the next album is called Killer, which is the next one to
Yeah,
check.
what's he named his, there's one called Easy Action, right?
Exactly, which was the one right before the breakthrough record, which is Loving It to Death, that has I'm 18 on it, which was the song that kind of sent them
Yes.
into the
Okay.
mainstream. But yeah, Easy Action, it's really good. It's a weird one. I'm surprised that John Brannon named the band after that, because it's cool, but it's only in spots. Like the first two albums are really weird because they're,
Oh, is that an earlier one?
yeah, it was first two records most
I'm
people don't
looking
know
now to
about.
see here. Yeah.
They were both on Frank Zappa's label, and they would go through like 30 parts each song, and they were really fractured and really kind of psychedelic and experimental. And then all of a sudden they got more
What
focused
was
and
his label? Straight? Is that it? Okay. Yeah, Pretty's for You is the first one.
Then
And
Easy Action.
then Easy Action, Love It to Death, Killer, School's Out. Obviously, we know,
Yeah.
Billion Dollar Babies. I've heard of that one.
All those ones right after the first two. And the first two have some really cool moments of kind of proto-punk and experimental stuff, but they're deeper waters to wade into.
Diehards only.
Exactly.
Right?
Yep,
Yeah,
yep.
that it's crazy too, looking just randomly, like I'm like speed at which they put out stuff back then is
Yeah, it's
crazy.
insane.
June 69, first album, second album March of 70, then another one March of 71, then another one November of 71. Like just
Damn.
wild.
I
Some
know, I know.
Taylor Swift stuff or something.
That's a great analogy. That's funny. But yeah, it's a good book. It's like I said, if you like the band at all, if you're a fan of the music or the kind of stage show aspect of it, it's all in there. But there's some great stories. You know, there's cameos from Iggy Pop, of course, and there's some interesting run-ins with Jim Morrison and a bunch of unusual folks. But for me, some of the best parts were just the small moments, the quiet moments where they're not like going wild on tour, or they're not trying to show how crazy a rock stars they were. They, you know, the smaller moments, the more meaningful interpersonal ones, but also the ideas of where some of the songs came from and
Right, the music, because at
the
the end of the
music.
day,
And
I mean, that's
yeah,
like
that's
I'm the same way. Like I kind of want to read about like when I read these bios, I want to read about like the creation of the record. Obviously, if there's like drama involving that, then I want to hear that. But like,
yeah.
yeah, like you said, like just like random groupie stuff, that doesn't interest me.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So it was a good read. It was a quick read. Only other thing I'll mention before I throw it back to hear some music you've been checking out is I feel like I should be on the PR firm for this band, but Vulture Feather have a 10-inch out, and I talk these guys up, seems like every handful of shows. But they're one of my favorite recent bands, so I got to. They have a 3-song 10-inch that just came out called Merge Now and Friendship. And it's not breaking too much ground, but they're really kind of deepening into the kind of heavy vibey grooves that they do. As I mentioned in the previous shows, it's kind of a merging of Echo and the Bunnymen and Lungfish or something. And on this
Oh,
release,
that sounds,
yeah, it's
that's like
fun.
a sweet spot.
Oh, for sure. And this one, they kind of throw in some mid-period Cure vibes too. So
Oh,
it's some strong
Vulture
material here.
Feather, you said?
Yeah.
All right.
And
Noted.
for sure. And the little kind of writing they have describing the record is kind of worth mentioning. And I think you'll dig this too. Talking about this record, they say, Merge Now and Friendship is a record about death and impermanence. It is a wilting flower beheld from a passing vehicle, neither a lament nor declaration. Songs have a kindred thread, all rising events and phenomena, people, dreams, songs, even worlds are all transitory in nature. We are all gonna die. Someday there will be no record of any of this. It is that very truth that allows for beauty. The impermanent nature of all that arises is the apparent aspect of the essence of being. And it goes on a little bit. I won't bore folks that aren't interested with all of it, but you get the idea. And this last year, especially, but just in general, that's a theme and a philosophical thread I pull on all the damn time. So this was right up my alley, even before knowing any of that, but that just cemented it for me on this release. The last song, Terminal Fair, is the most kind of Cure-like, but still, it's like got an intensity to it. Not that the Cure didn't actually, but 6.5 minutes, it's a little mini epic and shows the way towards possibly what direction they're going to move in next. So, and if you're like me, you get a lot of your music through Bandcamp. If you go to Vulture Feather, they have both their LP and this 10-inch. This one comes out on Felt Records, FELTE Records.
Can't say I'm familiar.
Yeah, me either. Might be their label. Oh, and it was recorded and mixed by Tim Green of DC fame. So
There you
there
go.
you go. But
I'm always a fan of connecting it back.
yeah, bringing it back to the source. And they're Baltimore natives, so it all connects. This is probably the first 10-inch I've bought in Jesus, well over 20 years, I would say.
Yeah, I'm not a huge 10-inch vinyl fan.
I used to like them a lot. Like, I love the Superchunk one that I've got and a Christy Front Drive one I've got. There's a couple that I love, but yeah, I don't reach for them all that often, to be honest.
It's just, I don't know why they don't, I don't know. They don't fit on the shelf the same way. We could go, that's, but that's just my brain, like how it works anyway. So
Yeah, we're learning a lot about your the way your
yeah,
brain
right.
works. All right, so what do you
Yeah.
got, man?
So one thing I wanted to mention that's not out yet, but it's completely related to your podcast, as you know. My good friend Mike, who does a label called No Quarter, is doing a record called so it's three artists on one record. It's Bonnie, Prince Billy, Nathan Salzberg, and Tyler Trotter. And it's called Hear the Children Sing the Evidence. Artwork is by Dan Higgs from
Who?
Longfish. Yeah, have you ever heard of him? Do you know Longfish? And then and the artwork looks, I mean, now everyone can see it. If you go to noquarter.net or Bandcamp, you can pre-order. And the artwork is awesome, I think.
Oh,
Like
for
it's
sure.
like print worthy, like something you'd want to like,
Yeah.
you know,
It's worth
hang
getting
up.
for the cover alone, but
And then
that's
the
just the
music,
entrance.
which like I saw you say when someone asked, how did you hear it? Because they're not releasing anything in advance. And Brian says, I have my ways. But we were able to hear, but basically, you know, it started off as Nathan Salzberg, who like I really like his records, and his wife, Joan Shelley,
What is his other stuff like?
like folky guitar, like he's an excellent guitar player, but he actually came from like the Louisville hardcore scene.
Well, that makes
He was
sense
just one of
then.
those people that was always so talented. Like, so, you know, online friend of mine, Tommy Brown, who played in, you know, By the Grace of God and Automatic and, you know, a bunch of Louisville bands. He's like, I did a band with Nathan and he's easily the most talented musician I've ever played with.
Wow.
So he's got like some solo stuff. He plays on records by his wife, who has records on No Quarter as well, Joan Shelley, who I think is also fantastic, very like folky kind of stuff. Her last album from 2022 was one of my favorites that year.
Nice.
Just really, really good. But basically, Nathan and Joan Shelley have a daughter, and when the daughter was a baby, he would like sing to her. And he would sing Lungfish stuff. So they do The Evidence from Passing Stow. And then they do Hear the Children Sing from, oh my God, I'm drawing a blank here. Love is Love. Yeah. So, and they're like, it's a 12 inch and they're 20 minutes each drawn out, but like,
That just blew me away when I first see how long these songs are, because it's the kind of thing that before you know too much about Lungfish, you think, oh, they live, they must play their songs for so long. But no, Lungfish kept everything so contained. So it's interesting just to see someone stretch these things out.
yeah, I think it's a super cool release. I love the fact that Dan Higgs is involved. Okay, I'm biased because Mike is an old friend of mine, but his label puts out a lot of great stuff that people should check out. I know you're a fan too of like Chris Forsythe, and I don't know, there's just a bunch of rad stuff. Endless Boogie's really cool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure. Yeah, and I mean, there's a connection, but a literal and a spiritual connection between Will Oldham and Dan Higgs. I've always noticed and felt that, and it's cool to see it manifest in ways like this. I mean, this isn't the first Lungfish cover he's done, but it's cool to see him commit to such two songs that take up an album length of diving into the Dan Higgs universe.
Like, can we consider this an album?
I
I
mean,
think so, right?
I would say so. I mean, people consider, prog albums that have a song aside albums, right?
Yeah, or like Sleep, you know, Dope
Sure.
Smoker
Yeah,
is
yeah,
one
yeah.
song. So
Right.
I guess, you know, this can be two songs and be an album. So,
Yeah.
but yeah, like you said, even just for the cover alone, and if you're listening to this podcast, there's a good chance you love Lungfish, as you should.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, get into it. It's all the stuff, like as far as like, you know, physical quality, like all the stuff Mike does there at No Quarter, as someone who, obviously gets a lot of records, his stuff's top quality. So yeah, noquarter.net or on Bandcamp, get it. So
It's exciting to see this thing come out
yeah.
and to see another, if this initiates or sparks another wave of new Lungfish fans into the world.
And then as far as records, I'll be brief because we want to get into the record at hand. But the month of April has been wild for like been a lot of stuff in the underground like metal, which I've still been down that rabbit hole. So lately I've been super into the label 20 Buck Spin. They're like one of those labels where it's like sort of like how Discord was for me as a kid. I know that if something's on there, it's at least going to have some redeemable qualities. And like last night when I drove to Jersey City, I had a commute, so I was by myself, so I got to listen to a lot of the newer stuff that came out. So like they put out a record by a band. Now the name, you're going to be like, what? Witch Vomit,
Oh, great.
which is like kind of like cav, they're from Portland. It's like cavernous kind of death metal with some blackened parts. It's called
Cool.
Funeral Sanctum.
You know, it's such a ridiculous name, but I love when bands can have a sense of humor about it and know that, yeah, we know this is a little ridiculous, but,
Right.
you know.
And it's been like it's really good. Got that like cavernous death metal sound. So they did 20 Buck Spin has put out a lot of releases so far this year. Another one, if people like tech death. There's a band that from Vancouver. They're called Atrae Billis, Atraebillis. They're like they have a new album called Almicide, Aumicide. Also on 20 Buck Spin, it came out like a week or two ago. Like tech death, kind of like if you're into like suffocation, gore guts.
Ooh, I love gore guts.
Yeah, like the more like crazy wild mathy tech stuff. See, I had like five quick ones, like real rapid fire. Necrot. Have you heard of them? They're from kind of, or they're from the Bay Area, I think.
There's a
On
so many good bands out here. I know the name.
Tank Crimes, Tank Crimes Records. They
Yeah.
do a lot of like punk
Yeah,
and hardcore.
exactly.
And this is like, kind of like old style death metal, like the band Death. They have a song called Cut the Cord. It's like their version of, I guess, Pull the Plug, but it's about like, the addiction to social media and the internet. But and like that sounds kind of corny, but the lyrics are really cool.
Cool.
So there's that. That just came out because I just saw them recently. I'll say the new Deicide album, even though it has horrible AI generated album art, the music itself is it's probably the best thing they've done since Stench of Redemption from like 2006. And then a new Dark Throne record on Peaceville called It Beckons Us All. That's like
How's that?
doomy Celtic Frost worship. And yeah, I think that's it. Did I have one more? Oh, Skeletal Remains. A friend got me their LP for my birthday. It's on Century Media. That's like, some kind of like 90s death metal vibes. And that one is called Fragments of the Ageless. And it has art by Dan Seagrave, who did all kinds of stuff in the 90s. Like he's the one that did like I think like Sepultura and all this stuff. So yeah, a bunch of stuff, rapid fire, but check it out. They're somehow all kind of similar, yet all very different once you actually listen. So
On the surface, similar, but yeah, absolutely.
what was the one you wanted to mention? You said
Oh,
there was one.
I thought for some, I thought you were going to mention, because the new, just within days of this recording, the new Big Brave came out, and I love that band. But, you know, something like that, an LP by a band you care about, deserves a deeper listen than a quick little
Okay.
listening.
I'm not familiar with them.
Oh, man, Jesus Christ. They're kind of pushing the envelope of heaviness. Definitely metal, but also lots of swans and some shoegaze and all types of things in there. It's so good.
Oh, and there was a new that's quite good, new Melvins
Oh, okay. Is it
Tarantula
good?
Heart,
Yeah.
really good, and My Dying Bride,
Wow.
Death Doom,
More peaceful.
Peaceville. Yeah, so that's a lot of stuff for people to check, but
Yeah. So let's get to it, man. Let's open the book on this band called Slant Six.
as far as history, I don't
Yeah.
really know. Like,
Oh, shit.
there's
Oh,
not
fuck.
much about them really. Like, I don't think, is there, besides like what's on Discord site?
Jeff would have dug up some stuff through interviews and all that, but yeah, that takes actual work. Yeah, okay, well.
We're dads. We don't we put in as
Exactly.
much we got enough work. But yeah,
Jesus.
no, I was thinking that too. I was like, oh man, I should probably like, I know that, like you said, that there's, you know, autoclave. There's the connection there. I don't know. And that would have been Christina, right?
Yep, she's the only one from Autoclave, but apparently right after they broke up, this band started with her, Myra Power on bass, her on guitar and vocals, Christina, that is, Myra on bass and vocals, and Marge Marshall on drums, and I guess later trumpet. So Slant Six formed in July of 92, which obviously couldn't have been too long after Autoclave broke up or after their last release. One thing that's obvious, if you look up, just type in Slant Six into Google, the only thing you're going to see, unless you put band after it, is a bunch of goddamn car part stuff.
Yeah.
So they obviously took their name from a six-cylinder engine in the 60s and 70s put out by Chrysler. I mean, what the fuck? You know, that's one of the things that turned me off, why I didn't give them a chance in the early days is,
The name?
yeah, well, partially because that it was like so just hip, quote unquote, to have a name that had something to do with the car parts or have something to do with motorcycles, or that era was like all about mechanics and mechanical
I guess,
things.
yeah, thinking of like the Simple Machines.
Simple Machines, Ignition started it, you know, before anyone else
I
with
never even, yeah, I
all the
never really thought
imagery.
of that. But yeah, I see that. Like, and I am looking, it's Christina, obviously, I think has the biggest resume as
Yeah,
far as
so far on here.
other groups. Like, I'm looking on Discogs. We were talking before re we recorded about her current project, The Casual Dots.
Yeah, which I love. You know, before I throw any shade on this episode, I just got to say how much I really enjoy the Casual Dots. And I liked some of the Autoclave stuff. So
She was an original member of Bratmobile, I guess.
that's right. She has a connection to them. I forgot about that.
Quixotic.
That's to come, I believe, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, she definitely has the most, like, Myra, Decapitated Lovers,
Which sounds like a metal band.
These, and Taro Bolero. I don't know any of these. I just know Slant Six, and I know
Yeah.
obviously Casual Dots, like we talked about, who just do a record every 20 years, I
I
guess.
know pretty much. I love the name Decapitated Lover. That's so funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, okay. So this sucks that I didn't have an interview on the show for the band members at least to fill us in on their formation. But all right, well, we've got a couple more episodes coming with Slant Six, so hopefully we'll get more history. I apologize, people. I did a bad job, and we don't have a Jeff Kaplan on this episode.
No, where is Jeff Kaplan? What's he doing? He's in trouble.
He's out in the wind, man. I don't know. He's causing trouble playing hockey, smoking, and playing bass. Who knows? So,
Me to read some Trouser Press?
sure.
It says here, nicely updating the stripped down power and acute melodic skills of Wire with a slightly charming, amateurish rhythmic attack. Washington, D.C.'s Slant Six offered refreshing primitivism amidst the increasingly proggish early 90s Discord sound.
Okay, that's worth. I'm definitely want to put a bookmark on that because a couple of the thoughts there. I'll either agree with or react to as we get into talking about the record itself. That's about the only thing that we could find online.
That's why I said it's not very, is this even a word? Googleable.
Well,
Like,
yeah, that's a problem too, but especially for this release specifically.
yes, because it doesn't have a name either.
Well, and it posthumously, it just gets called What Kind of Monster EP. But yeah, well, all right. Again, apologies for the lack of too much depth of background here, but I guess let's jump right in then. Let's drop the needle on this thing.
Yes, sir.
Okay, we put the grooves down in the intro to this song. Speaking of metal, first few seconds, I was like, oh, this sounds like some doom metal, like low, heavy, distorted, slow, whatever. Till the drums come in and everything takes off, goes more into the kind of trebly distortion that's kind of more the signature sound of this band with distorted bass and primitive drums, which that's worth mentioning straight off the top, I think, is what was the phrase they used in that review? Oh, you don't have it open.
Primitivism.
No, about the.
Slightly charming, amateurish rhythmic attack.
Yeah. Oh, slightly charming. That's funny. Because I feel like there's a deliberate, a very self-conscious, cute amateur vibe here, which is around this time was very popular as well. I mean, of course, there's the K Records thing going on too, but there was a lot of bands around this time pretending that they could play a little less well than they could play.
It did seem like, because like I know when I started getting into like punk, indie, whatever you want to call it, it would have been 93, 94, I was 12, 13 years old. It was like you didn't want to, like, you we didn't want to listen to bands that had like flashy guitar solos or whatever, or like crazy technical playing. Like, that wasn't something that was like, so to me, this does seem very much like a it's
Product of its
like
time.
a product of its time, but also, I guess in context of everything, it is like a breath of fresh air and it's very punk. I'm trying to think of what they're talking about as far as like different from the prog. Like, are they talking about Shudder to Think? Like, what are
I mean,
they?
prog's a strong word, but I could see in terms of, say, like coming on the heels of bands like Shudder and Jawbox and, as you mentioned, Circus Lupus, all these bands that were very busy. It
Yeah.
is like going the opposite direction.
So it's sort of like a throw. It is like sort of a throwback to maybe even like the earlier era of Discord, right? Where it was
I mean,
like.
kind of, but I would say a band like Swizz for sure would be that. But I feel like these folks are trying to go even further back, kind of in the
70s, like,
yeah,
yeah.
the 60s and 70s, in the way of Nation or something, stripping things down to a garage, an even lo-fi garage style vibe, as opposed to anything glossy and flashy, like you said.
Yeah, I can definitely see that also. And at the time, for me too, like, I was definitely into it then. It did kind of have that sound of like, oh, like, I could do a band. Because it's not,
Because it's so raw and so
yeah, it's not
immediate.
super like, you know, whereas you hear something like, you know, and one of my all-time favorites, Shudder to Think, and you're like, I can't play.
Yeah,
Like, I could never do a
what are
band.
they
Like,
even doing?
yeah, between the singing and the music, it's like,
The
no
time
way.
signatures, et cetera. Yeah,
I can't do this.
Well, and all right. I started this off a little abruptly. I feel like we, before dropping the needle, we should have gone over some general things, because that's what we're doing right here,
Okay.
anyhow, and that's fine.
It's your show, man. I'm just living in it.
But yeah, so we've given some context of their sound, of the type of approach. They get lumped in with Riot Girl. They're still around that time period, but I would say they're adjacent. I wouldn't say they're in that, because kind of like Fire Party, I mean, just because they're women playing underground aggressive music doesn't make them Riot Girl. And
No, yeah.
I don't think they were directly affiliated. And even, singing songs about empowerment and sexuality from a woman's perspective still doesn't make it by definition Riot Girl. So it'd be interesting to talk to them about it, see what their thoughts were about those times.
Yeah, I never thought of them as like if someone brought up Riot Girl, I never thought, like, to me they were just a punk rock band.
Yeah,
Like,
me too.
garagey punk rock that happened to have women, but it wasn't like, I can't speak for them, but I would assume that they just were like, you
Oh, come on, man. We can mansplain about the
know.
women in this
Yeah,
band.
exactly. Yeah, absolutely. Right. We have now, like, sort of like, I guess, like, same thing with, like, you know, band like L7, right? Like, they were just like, we're just a band. Like,
Oh, yeah.
they
They
weren't
were like
thinking
the
like,
female Stooges, is what they
yeah,
were
like,
going
they're not
for.
like, there weren't like, oh yeah, we're like, they're just like, yeah, we happen to all be
Yeah.
women, but like, we just want to be seen as a band.
Right. Yep. Definitely. And so the components of this band, I like in a way that it is so minimal. Both in approach, but also in lineup, a three-piece, classic three-piece lineup. Christina playing as basic a guitar as you can without being, it's not so amateurish that it's out of tune and messy and too much like, say, the what was the Kathleen Hanna band? The Sutra record, which I think I can safely say that not everything's for everyone, but that record was definitely not for me. That one felt
What was
very
it
off the
called?
cuff. Suture.
Was that pre-Bikini Kill, or was it like a
No, it
side
was a little
project?
project. Doug Burdzell, Kathleen Hanna, and I can't think of the third person, but on paper sounded great and on record sounded god awful to me. But anyway, it's getting off the topic. So yeah, Christina, her voice is developing, her guitar playing does the trick for what this is. The bass playing is, it's all right. There's a moment or two where I'll mention later when we get into the songs. It's not detracting, doesn't add much, doesn't take away much. The drumming I really like because it does feel natural. It feels like they play at the level they know, which does feel kind of primitive, but it feels perfect. And it's driving, it's just a natural sense of what a song needs for this type of music.
The drummer,
Yeah.
Marge Marshall.
Marshall.
Marge, Large Marge.
No,
No.
don't
Tell him Large Marge sent you.
Yeah,
No,
Marge
Marge,
Marshall's drumming, like,
who, it
stands
doesn't,
out
at
to me.
least according to Discogs, no other bands. Like, this was
Really?
the only,
Oh, wow.
this was the only band that she did.
Damn. Marge, we barely knew you. And I guess we could talk about production too before we get into these songs. It's definitely much, it's like three steps down production wise from what was going on with the other Discord releases at the time. Even though it's the same cast of characters, it's still Ian and Don in the band. I don't know if it's purposefully or by dint of their equipment or just an aesthetic choice, or I don't know, but it's.
I assumed it was yes to all, right? Like kind of like they kind of wanted it to sound more raw and garagey. I'm assuming this is their first record.
Which it
Well,
sounds
not
like.
I'm assuming. It is the, it is their first record, and it was recorded, I'm gonna assume, in probably one day. You know,
If it,
like
yeah, I know. I don't think they spent weeks on
no.
fine
And
tuning this.
I notice it's not produced by Ian either. It's just mixed. He's credited with mixing along with the band. I'm looking at the back of the 7-inch, recorded Inner Ear, March of 93, produced and engineered by Don, and then mixed by Ian and Slant Six. But yeah, and again, like, I don't know how, but I don't think they were given like thousands of dollars to record. I'm sure it was like, oh, you want to do a single? All right, cool. We'll get you in with Don, for the afternoon.
And Ian has a great ear. They both do have great ears, but also Ian was sounds like was is pretty notorious for kind of snapping his fingers like, come on guys, come on guys, come on, let's get this going, let's get this down. It's not about perfection, it's about getting the essence of what you guys are and not
And I
making you
think
into
it did.
something
I
you're
mean,
not.
it's a high energy little blast of, music. Like,
And it feels like a first record, and which it is. First 7-inch, because it's got that kind of first band, both vision of what it wants to be and what it portrays, but also kind of still this eclecticism of, well, we've got this kind of song and we've got this kind of song, and this song has a million parts or this song has one part. What are we, here's all the possibilities of what this band is gonna be, all within these three songs. So.
do you remember when this came out, or is that for later to talk? Like, do you
No,
remember when
we could
this
do that.
came out? Like, was
I
it?
honestly don't remember when this specific record came out. I later, and still, only thing I've owned by Slant Six is a split 7-inch with makeup that
Makeup?
came out later.
I have
But
that as well.
no, I mean, I was aware, I think around this time or right after, I was aware of the band. Like I said, on tour, I saw them play like one show when I was on tour in the East Coast, but no, I was just kind of, they were one of those bands, like a lot of people that aren't deep into Discord, which I am and was, but I was, like I said, I was so busy doing my own stuff at the time that I lost
And like you said, you weren't
total.
living in DC. I'm sure if you're living in DC, you went to whatever the store
Exactly, I'd
was.
have been seeing a
The
bunch of
record would have
shows,
been
et
like, here's
cetera.
a new Discord release.
Yeah,
Yeah, for
exactly.
me, it was the Soda Pop Ripoff album. And because that
Yeah, that
was
was everywhere around that
94.
time.
And that was when I was first kind of really, 93, 94. So it was like, oh, it's on Discord. Cool. Plus the CD looked cool, it had the red case. And then these songs were tacked on at the end
And that's how you first heard these
of
songs.
that. Yeah, because these were just part of the classic Discord putting the extra stuff on the CD. So they never really lived for me as like a separate entity.
All right, well, now let's really do it. We put the needle down and pulled it right back up, but let's put it down and keep it down. So what kind of monster, goddamn it? I'll just say real quick before I throw it to you and we can go back and forth. This song, I feel like, is the one that they thought was their strongest. Because, I mean, one, it's on the A side, but two, it, I don't know, you just get this feeling. And by the way it's written, et cetera, it just feels like this is our, it probably did really well live, et cetera. They're probably like, this is our hit. We got to focus on this song, which is fine. The other main thing that came to me listening to it, though, over and over and over, both lyrically somewhat, but also just the music, the actual literal music and the lyrics. What I really, really wish would happen and obviously never did would be to hear fucking Danzig sing this song. That would make this song amazing. 'Cause this seems like a Misfit song.
Like one of the like early, I mean,
Like
granted, no,
Static
all
Age.
Misfits, but like Static Age when they had that more garagey vibe, not like Earth AD or
Can't
whatever.
you hear what kind of monster?
Yeah, I mean, and it doesn't help or hurt that monsters in the title, because as we know, that's a very Danzig subject matter. But yeah, I can see that, and I wonder if they were into the, I'm sure they were probably fans of the Misfits. Like for all we know,
Of
like
course,
this,
yeah. I mean, it's hard not to have been at that point.
inspired by that era.
Christina's an interesting vocalist because once she tries so many things, especially throughout Autoclave, and by this point, she's getting more confident, even though she's kind of trying to find different aspects of her voice to work with and what works and what doesn't. And her sense of pitch sometimes is spot on with their singing, and sometimes it's just slightly off. And I feel like the chorus on this, even though it's this big, rousing, melodic chorus, is just a little off. And it needs, like, maybe if there were backups, I think it would have, like, really sent it into the place where they felt it when they wrote it or when they played it great or whatever, and with people singing along or whatever. I could see that being really cool. But this song feels like such a near miss to me because of that, because the chorus just really doesn't hit it hard as it should.
That's interesting. I don't know. To me, I just thought out and see, and then it's like, but I this always happens, right? Like when somebody says, like now I'm like, oh, I'll have to like
I hear it with those ears.
listen again with that insight and see like if I agree. 'Cause sometimes somebody can point something out. I mean, there's stuff I've listened to for decades, and then somebody points something out and I'm like, oh my God, I never thought of that, but you're absolutely right. This sounds like, this or whatever. So I'd be curious upon revisiting after we do this, like where I stand on that. But I do agree that that's, what kind of monster he was clearly like, that was them putting their best foot forward. Like they were like, this is the song. Like, I mean, there's a reason, right? That it's often referred to as the what kind of monster are you 7-inch, like you said, because that's the hit for sure.
And I say that about the chorus, but I feel like the verse, her vocals work really well, very strong. It's just I hear a certain, and it's same with the Autoclave days too. There's certain out times where I hear this element, and maybe that's just part of her saying of her holding back. And on the chorus, I hear that she doesn't open up the throttle. She's kind of half giving it her all, which I'm sorry to keep harping just on that part, but it's just because it's you it's supposed to be the it feels like the payoff, or it's supposed to be, but it's kind of like it's so close. Regardless, I like the song. I don't love it. I like it, like I said, because it is a near miss to me. By the second chorus, I believe it could just be the murky production, but it sounds almost like underneath everything, almost like a Hawaiian slide type of like little thing going on. I mean, if
I
obviously there's not a Hawaiian guitar, but it
don't know. No, Ian MacKaye, Hawaiian guitar. He's credited
right? Yeah,
real small at the
there
bottom
you go. There you
with
go.
the asterisk. You just have to look.
But yeah, as the song goes on, that's part of it too. It feels like they get more comfortable with each passing verse and chorus. What else do you got for it? Anything?
I mean, like I said, like to me, I think as far as what you said about it being like that was the song, like when I think of this 7-inch, like that's the song I think of. Like it's the most memorable of the three, I think.
Oh, see, I disagree. It's like when the Beatles put out their singles and the A side is obviously the one that's like the crowd pleasing hit, but the B side is the one that's the better song. That's how I feel about this, which is a spoiler alert for our songs we're
I
going to
know,
choose,
right?
but
But I don't think any of the, like, I like the record. It kind of goes by so fast. And
it does.
for me, again, I think as someone who got into them from Soda Pop
Oh, yeah, it's at
rip
the
off,
very end of
like
everything.
it's at the end, it was like kind of an, almost an afterthought. Like when I think of the band, I think of the LP.
Right. I do like the bridge. Again, I feel like I feel like that register when she's singing, "Why should I be scared of you?" Like that's totally natural. It feels like that's just pouring out of her. She's not thinking about it. That's all I got. I think it's what they thought of, and maybe what the I mean, not like Discord's thinking of. We gotta put out the hits, buddy. But
But for all we know, like, yeah, Ian was like, oh,
that's the song. Yeah.
that's the song. Like, we got to make sure
Focus
we
on that, yeah.
focus on this one, and you definitely want to put that first. I'm sure he had, I'm assuming he would let the bands do what they wanted, but I would assume he still
Yeah,
weighed in and said, hey, I think
I don't know. I mean,
this.
Ian, he doesn't seem like the type to really give his
Have any
opinion too
thought? Yeah.
often. Yeah, or have many opinions on it.
So yeah, it's a cool song. I'm definitely now looking forward to re-listening and picturing Danzig singing it.
Oh, you got to, because that makes it, when I'm listening to the song, I'm partway through, I start getting a little fatigued on the chorus, because like I said, being a musician, it's frustrating to hear something that you know could be there and it's not there. But when I hear Danzig singing it as I'm listening, I'm like, oh, hell yeah, here we go.
See, we need
But
you as you need to be a producer.
yeah, there you go. I
So,
know. Or, oh, here we go, the Danzig Christina duet. Of what kind of money there, that's the ticket.
I do want to know now too. Like, I want to be like, what were their thoughts on the Misfits?
Yeah, because it's going to come up again. Oh,
Yeah. I mean, and then the second LP kind of has that vibe too. The
yeah. Final thoughts for what
what
kind
kind
of
of monster?
monster? Now I'm thinking of some kind of what's that song?
That's what I was thinking of too.
Overall, near miss, not a hit, but Danzig would make it a hit. And like the
Danzig sings the hits.
I know, right? And the chorus I didn't mention as well. There's like one guitar chord that she throws into the chorus that makes it so indie. The rest of it's very driving, just very downstrokey driving. And then there's this one kind of minor chord or some kind of fruity sounding chord that throws in that makes it super early 90s indie sounding, which is maybe part of its what makes it that kind of bouncy, catchy type of vibe.
I agree too about the beginning. You're like, oh, is this, are we getting into
Yeah, it's so heavy. It's like, is
some
it
doom
some doom,
territory?
some void? What's gonna happen? Yeah.
Yeah, void. I didn't even think of that too. Yeah.
Yeah. And apparently through trying to find anything on the band few minutes ago when we were Googling frantically,
I'm still looking. Yeah.
yeah, came across that the band XHEX, Mary Tim and Eve band that I really dug.
Oh
They did a
yeah.
cover of What Kind of Monster, which I'm gonna have to look up on YouTube because I'm sure they've got a it's gotta be there. That would be interesting. XHEX were
Huh.
cool.
Yeah, that I would not have thought of that. I mean, it makes sense,
Yeah.
but at the same time, like, yeah, I wouldn't have thought of it.
And talk about a band that has some of the same elements but goes in the other direction.
And makes sense, Mary from Autoclave, and then
Yeah, exactly. All right. We turn the record over.
no, we don't.
Oh, is it on the same side?
Yeah.
What? So what's on? I thought that was
Semi
just the.
Blue Tile
Is the second track.
a like 50 second.
And then
Yeah.
33 Vision is by itself.
Believe me, damn it.
All right. So, wow. Okay. I just assumed that was by itself because it feels like a longer song too, but maybe not. Semi Blue Tile. I feel like, I don't know what you think. We might have a difference of opinion here. I feel like this is a perfect song in the perfect length. 50, less
Really?
than a minute. Very
I
post.
mean,
It's very wiry. Let's talk about wire. It's very post-punk and
it's
jerk.
definitely wiry, yes. But it's also like super short. It's almost short to the point where it's like I barely have time to have a thought on.
I feel like they get in and get out right in the nick of time. Like it's, if it went on for 3 minutes, it would just start to get redundant at 1 minute. I think it totally works.
Definitely the classic Discord, like you're thinking about all the stuff that the Discord has done, their early years. 50
Yeah.
seconds was like a
Pretty
vast
par of the
majority of the
course.
catalog. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I hear Wire, I hear Gang of Four, like earliest Cure type of vibes on this song. Just very fractured rhythm, and that she sings great. I really like it. And even though in the chorus there's like one fluffed bass note every time, like one note that's like the wrong
Sloughed.
yeah, goes into a chord that doesn't match the guitar, but it works out because it resolves. So I really like Semi Blue Tile. Obviously, he didn't.
No, it's not that I didn't like it, but just like that wouldn't have been a standout track for me. Like I almost like you, like I have this 7-inch and I hadn't played it in a while, and I almost forgot that there was another song before flipping it over.
That's funny because it makes, I don't know, I'm surprised because it would make so much sense to have some kind of, or what kind of
You keep
monster?
thinking of the Metallica documentary.
I know. To have what kind of
I
monster,
thought so
side
too. And
A,
then,
side B, those two short songs. But oh well.
yeah, like
All
I'm
right.
trying to look at the grooves and see, like, what I mean. Eh. It does look like both sides are about the same running
Okay.
time.
Huh.
So
Interesting.
what do we know, man?
Yeah,
We
what do
don't.
we know?
I'm looking now to look at and see the track times.
Yeah.
So we got Some Kind of Monster is a tight 2 minutes, 3 seconds.
Is it really? Okay.
Then we have
The 50-second semi blue.
Semi Blue is
50,
56 sec.
yep. And 33
57
vision.
seconds,
Oh,
and
that's why
then
33 visions is
is 323. So there you go. So basically, like the two A side songs are the same length as the B side.
put
But
together.
like you said, thinking of it in terms of how I view the record, you would have thought that both would be on the flip side.
Yeah. So, speaking of which, we didn't get to the last one, 33 vision.
Cool song. Yeah, like I said, it's been such a long time since I had played these. I was like, oh yeah, but spoiler alert, you can tell what's going to be my pick for the song, right? But I mean, these short records, there's only so much to choose from. But I was thinking, like, it to me, it sounds like what's, I guess, weird is this considered even a single, since there's three songs? Like, to me, I usually think of
Three
a
songs
single,
usually make some EPs to me. Oh,
right?
anything more than two.
Like, because a single, I think here's the hit on side A and then the B side. And
Exactly.
in this case, like, so it's a three song, 7-inch EP.
Yeah. So the main riff, which is pretty much not the only, but almost the only riff on 33 Vision, the not at all annoying after 3.5 minutes nonstop riff. It starts off, it's fairly interesting. It sounds to me, the riff sounds so of its time and sounds like a like I hear it just with the crackle and pop of a 7-inch, even though I've only heard it digitally.
Mine actually did have the crackle and pop
Does
of a
it? Yeah, yeah.
seventh. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that gives me a nostalgic feel, like I hear it like in a group house with people's backpacks thrown around and their gas station
Like,
jackets
yeah,
on the chairs.
check out the
Yeah,
new
yeah, yeah.
Discord release.
Yeah. But so the main riff to me sounds like a Fisher Price Nirvana riff. It's got this kind of like what do you call it, a bleach type of
Huh.
vibe to it, but played on tiny instruments.
See that? You're making me want to go back and play them all. Because and I want to like I don't think I like the whole record, but I wouldn't say, like, to me, I think the first LP is the one I really reach for.
The go-to.
So like, yeah,
Yeah.
like to me this, I mean really, to me this sounds like kind of like a demo, which I'm sure it kind of was,
Yeah.
right? Like it's a first EP.
Yeah, it could be like a good demo or an okay 7-inch, which is what it is. But it feels like a first 7-inch, which it's not fair to judge like too harshly on a first 7-inch. It's a band announcing itself. It's its calling
Yeah,
card, so.
I think it's a good debut.
Yeah.
I just think that the full length kind of took this vibe and ran with it, so.
Yeah. Well, and I've got more on 33, so. And think it's kind of interesting, although again very 90s, but she does a good job of the way she sings the verses, where she does a spoken line and then she answers the spoken line with this really pretty singing line. She does it well, although after Kim Gordon, I think not many women could pull off the spoken thing as well as her, because God knows there are so many goddamn 90s songs that had the female vocals and then the little part where you're like, and then I went to the da-da-da, and then I did this, and then goes into a hard part of them singing again. And
Kim Gordon was definitely,
yeah, I mean, she was the forerunner, and
yeah.
she just had so much fucking attitude that you can't mess with her. But
Absolutely not.
yeah, I'm not sure, like I said, I mean, I'm not sure the main riff has enough internal fortitude to support the 3.5 minute length of the song. It's not terrible and it's not like painful to get through to the end, but you're not sure it was worth it by the time I get to the end.
I feel like I should have like really like listened. Like it's always hard. It's always hard for me to get. I almost feel like if I got super, and I think that's part of like if I got, I don't want to say critical, like it's a bad thing, but if I listen to stuff like that, I feel like it would, the way my brain is, it would fry it. Like to me, it's like, what is it? Like was a Paul Stanley, like there's good music and bad music. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and there's sometimes I hear stuff and I'm like, this is like middle of the road. Like we were talking, you know, before airing about like, you know, a certain record where I was like, I loved these two LPs, and then I heard this EP and it just did nothing for me. But like
Placeholder
I
record.
don't, yeah, like I don't get too into the nitty gritty. Like to me, it just like sounds like we said, like it's a decent first release from really a very short-lived project band.
Yeah, to give it a little more love here, I do like when it shifts out of the part for a minute for the bridge, and the part's kind of more, again, post-punky and very, it like they pulled it from the wreckage of Semi Blue Tile. It's a nice little palate cleanser from the main plotting riff on this song, and then the chorus, which barely happens, like once or twice. But when she sings the 30-30 vision thing and there's doubling of her vocals or backups, that sounds awesome. And the way she sings it actually does sound like Static Age Misfits. 30-30 vision. You know, it's
And I
actually
could, and maybe it's because I'm thinking 20 eyes, but I'm like, yeah, I could totally hear,
that part I love. I mean, like this song and actually all of Side B, or no, all of Side, that is Side B. That a couple of these songs feel like infant songs in the sense of not fully formed yet, and where they're learning their craft, they're throwing some parts together, and some of them work better than others, and some of them they feel like parts that they're like, oh shit, we need another part, and they just graft something on there. But again, as you said a minute ago, this is a first 7-inch, this is their introduction. And the things that work really well. Things that don't, you know, they stand out, but they're not, you know, crimes against humanity or anything. I feel like it's a worthwhile and interesting first release. It makes me curious because I have not heard the album that you heard before you heard this. Before this, I had not heard anything except for that split 7-inch. So
okay.
everything about Slant Six is new to me.
Chronologically, is that split? Oh, well, I guess Makeup
It's
was, so that
later.
was like one of their later things because Makeup was like 95. Well, I was wondering too with this band where this 7-inch sits as far as people that are like fans, right? Like, because I like, I mean, and granted, there's only a 7-inch, a split, and two LPs. Where does like it doesn't seem like there's a clear-cut favorite. Like, I feel like I've talked to people who really like the second LP, but also people that really like the first LP. So I'm curious, like, when you get to those episodes, like, where.
I don't know if it's just the name is so catchy and so evocative, or if it's because I heard people say it so much, but I feel like the first LP seems like, if I think of Slant Six, I think of that record.
And I think you might be right too. And the fact that that one was reissued, like the second one's never been
Right.
repressed. It's kind of hard to come by now.
Okay. Well, yeah, and I looked, so this 7-inch, when I was looking at Discogs as well, there's zero for sale right now.
Huh.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I'm looking because
Yeah,
I'm like, oh, I got mine from Discogs like several years ago. So I did not, like I said, I did not get this.
in the
Like
time
when it
period.
came out,
Yeah.
yeah. Like I got it within the last two, three years because I knew that you were going to ask me to be on this episode. So I was like, I better get that 7-inch. Yeah, like I'm seeing my copy when to, yeah, September of 2022 is when I got it. And I do see it last sold April 23rd
Okay.
for $10.
10 bucks. Okay. It's fair.
And there are copies. I think you're thinking no, there's no US sellers. Maybe you have yours
Oh,
filtered, but
maybe,
there are a
maybe.
bunch. You can get it for from Japan for $20 plus 25 in shipping.
Holy shit. Yeah.
Germany for about the same. So I guess I'm lucky that I got mine for
When you did, yeah.
like not much, like a few dollars.
It's funny, and I've got open what I've been listening to it on, which is the Apple Music version which of Soda Pop Ripoff at the end. And when I scroll down to the bottom, they have little things like, more by Slant Six than featured on, and it's featured on some this Apple playlist called Essentials Riot Girl.
Huh.
So anyway, you want to talk about the graphics by Jason
Yeah.
Farrell on this thing?
I mean, I would say it looks like a Discord, or let's say maybe not. It looks like it's from DC. Like
I think it, I mean, it absolutely looks even
like if you were flipping
specifically
through,
like a Discord
yeah.
of 1993 Discord. This fits the bill.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, he's where I said. Jason Farrell did the graphics. The photo on the front was taken by Monica Gesu, Gesue. I don't know like what other photos she's taken. And it's like, pretty bare bones,
Yeah. But with a fil yellow filter and
yellow filter, the three of them there.
I don't know, like all their albums, especially their band photos, I think that was part of at the time the turnoff for me as well, is that very hipster. I mean, they're very, very consciously dressing to be hip. This isn't just their streetwear, this is them playing dress up. Is hipster cool kids of the early 90s. It's that time period, that vibe where it's no longer just the geeky kids, it's
Did
the
you have
cool
an issue
kids.
with the Nation of Ulysses doing that?
Less so because it felt like they semi-invented it at the time, especially the whole suits thing and the, their vibe was so self-contained, but once it filtered out and became influential on so many other bands, then it kind of
Hmm,
became a
okay.
thing. Well,
'Cause
cause, yeah, because the Nation, it felt like the same reason I liked Kiss and their makeup and stuff. They were obviously putting on a thing. It wasn't like, this is who we are, we don't walk around. I mean, they probably did, but it felt like alter egos. Then more and more bands started doing it and being and kind of
Oh yeah, I mean it
having the
became.
vibe of clickishness, etc. And I'm not saying them as individuals, Slant Six, were like that, but that's the vibe I get from seeing their covers, that they're cool, they're hip, they're not like vulnerable or awkward or angry or anything else. They're cool, they're not hot. Obviously not in a physical way, is not what I'm talking.
Right. You mean cool, like because they look like they're dressed in winter coats?
Yeah, I mean all their shots, they have multiple layers on and they've got their hair done just so and glaring at the camera. They're not like smiling, they're not candid moments, they're very manicured.
But then you would think like, would you think this if it was dudes? You know what
Oh
I mean?
yeah,
Like
yeah,
it's
yeah,
like
yeah.
yeah.
Oh yeah, 'cause like I said, there are so many bands of guys like this, absolutely, and
Okay.
they would annoy the shit out of me on tour. 'Cause they were always the ones that you had to break the ice with, and even then sometimes wouldn't talk to you unless you were friends with their friends or unless they knew that they respected your band. And it's like the bullshit that I tried to get away from to get into punk for not to get into a new version of high school.
So you're like a, as far as like punk, you're thinking like
Aesthetically.
you should just be, you know,
No, I mean,
not, no, I'm trying to, I'm just trying to think like more like you're more into like the street clothes, like, you know, like they talk about like a band like Descendants, right? Like just thinking
Like
off the
no
top of my head,
fashion.
like,
Like,
or Husker Du, like,
yeah.
or
Well, Husker
Minutemen.
Du kind of and Minutemen both kind of had their own weird, same with Black Flag for that
But
matter.
the aesthetic was that they had no aesthetic almost,
Kind
because
of.
they just were dressed like how they would dress
Yeah,
if they
yeah.
were going to, you know.
I mean, that's what initially drew me to the punk styles as far as visually. But then there are, you know, Misfits looked fucking cool. But obviously, they're not going to the grocery store dressed like that or whatever, you know? And that's how I think about stuff like this, too.
Okay. All right. No,
That's, yeah.
I'm just I'm
Yeah, and it makes me think of things like, I'm not
taking
gonna
it
put,
all in.
yeah, I'm not gonna put this part in, but like when, Bill Burbo,
Yeah.
like by the end of Jawbox, he was like glamming it up, and same with especially, look like Jane's Addiction from Shudder. Can't think of anyone's name.
Stewart?
No, the guitarist,
Oh, Nathan
Nathan,
from
got with
Swizz.
his wide open shirt and tattoos and buff body and hair just so. That kind of thing just annoyed the hell out of me. Because it was like they're playing a role, playing a kind of rock star versus punk rock kids.
Fair.
But like I said, there's exceptions, like things that worked for me that was pretense. It had to do with the attitude it was couched in. But I mean, you know, there's the band, the Rev Summer was kind of a conscious look too. Bands were looking like 60s and going for a certain vibe. And bands
I
like
thought
G.
this fit the aesthetic of the time and the era. I mean, to me, I guess. But see, I never saw them live, so I don't know. Like to me, I guess I just thought like this is how they looked.
Yeah.
If it was cool out, obviously,
Right,
if
right.
this was
Yeah, and I mean,
the
maybe,
dog days of summer, I'd be
yeah.
like, yeah, maybe, yeah, take off the, you know, take off the coat,
The fluffy coat, yeah.
'cause you're gonna like pass out while trying to play in this dingy basement or whatever. But
Right. And I'll just caveat everything I've said by saying this is purely based on one, obviously, just my personal take on it. I don't pretend anything's absolute of my opinions. And a lot of it's colored by my interaction with any of that type of scene around that time. And I was a young man and highly opinionated
so
too.
was this while you lived in Colorado by the time this was out? Was that where you were at?
93, yes. Why did I feel like I had already gone to California? No, not yet. I was still, yeah, Colorado. Yeah, just that caveat. Because, you know, I feel like I'm being extra critical. I do feel these things, but at the same time, I don't dislike this record despite all the things I've said. It's really interesting to see Christina's trajectory as a musician and as an artist.
Well, like you said, you love that Casual Dot
Yeah,
stuff.
I really do.
And I mean, I can only speak for myself, but like if someone was saying they liked the most recent thing I've done the most, I'd probably be stoked.
Yeah, definitely.
Right? Like, so you have to think of
Everything you
it
could
that
hope for.
way. Yeah. Like there's, you know, like instead of being like, I mean, when I was
Yeah,
in
you guys
bands, I remember
sucked after the
getting,
first project
yeah,
you ever
love your
did.
demo. Never really cared for anything else.
I
So,
know. Yeah. That
all
was the
right.
big 80s and 90s
Thanks.
thing. I know.
Yeah.
Oh, that album
Thank.
sucks. It's
Yeah.
the first demo is what you got to get.
Thank you, I guess.
That's
And I heard
funny.
that would happen a lot, like for bands overseas. Like, I think one of the places I've heard is like Germany. Like, you go to
Yeah, I could see
Germany
that.
and
They're
they'll
so
straight up
blunt
say,
now.
like, yeah, they'll say, like, your first album is great. Your new album, I do not like at all.
I know,
Yeah.
yeah. All right, so we're at the part of this show where we talk about the neighborhood where this thing lives in your collection.
So, oh, I should have paid more attention
Oh shit, you don't
to
have it?
where I pulled it from. Dude, my 7 inches are like buried under my bed in boxes.
Yeah,
So
mine are a mess too.
I was all proud I pulled it out. But I want to say, like, most likely it's between like Shudder. Like, I have like a Medusa
Yeah.
seven inch,
Yeah.
or maybe even the split with Sunny Day,
Oh God, I forgot about that. Yeah, I
the
never had that.
Shudder
Yeah, that's cool.
Sunny Day. It's like in that area.
So you keep your splits with, you don't separate them.
No, usually I'll keep it like with whatever band I have
That you
this, so
like more?
I don't know, because I love Sunny Day, but I don't own any Sunny Day 7 inches. I just have the albums, so I put it with Shudder to think. If I owned both, I probably would have been a coin toss,
Oh,
basically,
okay.
as to where I'd put it, probably with whoever had more. Like, if I had like 6 Sunny Day 7 inches and 4 Shudder to think, I'd probably have just put it, you know, with the Sunny
Okay.
Day. But yeah, so that's it. Like, 7 inches aren't as well curated as my
Yeah.
vinyl.
Yeah. Same here. 'Cause I mean, you mentioned 10 inches, like 7 inches, especially for my turntable, I've got to change the band on it every time I go between 33 and 45. So, like, it's such a pain in the ass. I never, ever listen to 7 inches anymore, unfortunately.
I don't either. You know, when I get new records, like full LPs, I'll play them before I file them away.
Yeah.
But like, I had a couple 7 inches that were sitting in my bin that I finally just filed away because I was like, I don't feel like playing these. Like, new ones, like I got that Descendants Circle Jerk split and the Discord, how they were like randomly like, hey, we have some SOA and Minor Threat
Right,
seven
from
inches
the
that
box
are
set,
like
yeah.
from the box set, but not in. And I was like, oh, they'd be cool to have separate. But I'm like, file them away.
You're
So,
like, if I want to listen bad enough, I'll go find it. Yeah.
yes.
Yeah. So on mine, like, haven't done this show for a while. I had to go out very, very far, especially when you have multiples by different bands. So it's like I went out so many spaces, but what I came to was way out of the S's on one side, Henry Rollins and the Hard-Ons.
I remember that.
Yeah,
Yeah.
Let There Be Rock, their AC/DC cover on one side, and far over on the other side, Social Distortion. I don't even remember where I got this. I think I just someone gave it to me. Bad Luck Acoustic and Cold Feelings. I don't think I've ever listened to this.
Are you a big Social D
No.
fan? Me, like,
The
I
very
like
early
them.
days, I Mommy's Little Monster, I played the hell out of. And then once they went kind of bar
Rockabilly or
band,
whatever. Yeah.
rockabilly vibe, I was not interested.
I have a friend that loved them back then. And like, I remembered, like, what was the story of my life?
Yeah, that was a big
Was
one.
like the big hit. But yeah, they're decent.
Yeah, I
But
mean, when those songs come on like a playlist or on a at my work, I'm like,
yeah, but it's not something that I feel the desire to put on or go see. So
Yeah,
I was just
absolutely.
curious where you landed. And I think the one, if I were to pull one out, it would be Mommy's Little Monster.
Yeah, it's solid. It's just if you knew nothing about Mike Ness, it would help or help me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny that Slant Six in my collection lives between such testosterone music of Rollins and Mike Ness,
Which they still both have that DC connection with the Another State of Mind and
Yeah, that's
right,
funny. Yeah.
and Henry. But yeah, 7 inches. I was having this conversation literally last night when I was with a friend at the Teenage Fan Club, and saying back when they were $3 postpaid, it was great because like you could go to a distro or a record store and you could get 4 7 inches for the price of one
Oh, yeah.
CD or something.
For sure. Or you like go to a show and you don't want to invest in an album, but you're like, oh, I'll check out their 7-inch, sure.
Yeah. And now, like you said, it's like they're trying to, that's why I barely get them anymore. They're trying to sell them for, $15 or whatever. It's like,
So
fuck that.
crazy. Yeah. Yep. All right. Well, we got no interview this time. So let's jump to the outro. Thanks again for coming on again, Greg. It's always great to see you for one. This is the part of this show where we talk about what we have to add something to.
To the ever evolving Jeff Kaplan right now is his ears are burning. If he is playing hockey, right? His ears are burning and he's like, I don't understand how my ears are burning. But it is the end on end, the ever evolving Discord mixtape, which is now up to a staggering 11 hours and 4 minutes.
Damn, there it is.
So what are you putting on the mix?
Well, three songs or less, I feel like we need to be in a, oh shit, I was gonna say it. I feel like we should come to a
Be in agreement.
consensus, but this is hard because I don't think we will.
I'm okay with putting, I'm assuming you want to put on Semi Blue Tile.
Yeah, or even I even prefer 33 vision to
30-30 vision.
the 33.
You know what? Let's just to kind of thumb people that, to not be predictable, right? Because the predictable for me would be to
Would be
put
obviously,
what kind of monster.
yeah.
Then I was thinking Soda Pop CD doesn't have its own catalog number, or I would be
Oh, it
like, oh, there's
doesn't.
another chance. No. So,
But
and
that's
the
still a
LP,
possibility for the LP, but
but the LP doesn't have these three songs,
Yeah,
only the CD of it. But I guess technically, since it's the same number, someone could
it would
choose
still be an
one of these.
option, yeah.
But I would say 11 hours of music, that's a lot. So maybe adding 57 seconds
There you go.
isn't such a bad idea.
Really? You're down with all right.
Yeah, I love a good curveball.
All right. Oh, cool. I appreciate it. 'Cause I would have relented if you pushed hard on
Nah,
what
this,
kind
because
of.
again, this was a decent debut, but it's not like there's definitely records where I would be kind of, for lack of a better term, fighting.
More
Like, no,
invested in.
no, pushing. But this, I'm like, yeah, I'm cool with any of them. I don't think there's any bad tracks.
Yeah, there you go. That's good. Fair enough. All right. We got another one under wraps. You know, people, we have a Patreon account and on an extras club. I usually spend a couple minutes talking about it, but I do it every episode. I'm going to skip this one. So check it
What's
out if you
next?
want. What is next? You tell me, Greg.
So this is Discord 85. And I mean, we were talking about the title, Wikipedia, which we know is the most factual
Oh, yeah.
source of
That's where I get all my
information,
news.
shows this titled as What Kind of Monster Are You? So up next, you do have a half release. You have 85 and a
Right.
half, Rain Like the Sound of Trains, Washington Bullets.
Yeah.
And then your next proper is the self-titled Holy Rollers album.
Yep. Yep. And I just realized the other day, preparing for the Rain Like the Sound of Trains first 7-inch, I had totally forgotten that Bobby wasn't in the band on the first 7-inch. It's like, that's right.
Oh, I didn't
It's
even
just,
know that. I didn't,
yeah, it's
yeah.
just Pete singing.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I never dove deep, which is funny because I love Soulside and I love Verbal Assault.
You love Doug Purcell.
And I do. I love
Yeah.
Beefeater.
Yeah.
I never dove deep, so I'll have to
Their
check that out.
LP is the most successful kind of capturing of them.
You got some good stuff coming up,
Yeah.
man. Like you have, and then I love when this happens. The since they put Faith, Void, and
Yeah.
Subject to Change, you
Yeah.
get to do the Faith Void split again.
And in the first demo of Faith, right?
Well, that'll be later,
Oh
yeah.
wait, what? Faith, Void, Faith
This
is.
is the Faith Void Faith
Oh,
where
yeah,
it's the
that's right.
split
Subject to
and
Change.
Subject to
Yeah.
Change, which was that was my intro, was that CD with
Oh,
like
really? Jesus
30
Christ.
some tracks, right?
I never
Then you
owned it, but
get
that's so classic. What all that? Yeah.
then you get Ignition
Ignition. Yeah.
discography,
Yeah, it's Alec month.
Hoover LP, Red
Yeah.
Medicine,
Yeah. There's a
and
lot
then
of
the
good
Slant
stuff.
Six
Some
LP. So
Lungfish,
yeah.
et cetera. Yeah.
This is all stuff that I remember coming out.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
So nice.
Glad to have you back.
You know you can always find me.
Cool. All right, man. Well, Greg, it went by too fast. Maybe too long for some, too short for me.
Not for me.
Yeah.
I love hanging and getting to talk with you. And like I said, you ask me back anytime.
Right on.
And I love Discord. I love digging into. I try to have as much of the physical stuff for Discord. It's like one of the labels I just collect.
Yeah, no.
So I don't get as I'm not like a
It's
shout out
fanaticalist
to
Nico.
Nico, who will have like 75 colors of it, but I at
Jesus
least like to
Christ, yeah.
have one. There was a point where I was getting some of the, and then I was like,
Yeah,
I don't need
why?
it. Like I
Yeah.
was like, so I made room, but yeah.
Cool. All right,
Anytime,
man.
brother. All
Right
right.
on. What do we say here?
Take it away. We used to be gee.
Used to be.
I can't even think of the outro. I'm the Oh, wait, hold on. Take it away, Craig.
Yeah, there you go.
And on it. And on.